Welcome to the Lorehounds and our special coverage of the PBS miniseries, The American Revolution. This is our podcast on episode 3, titled Times That Try Men's Souls. I'm David. I'm one of the main hosts of the Lorehounds. And with me for this special project, as always, is Loremaster Brian8063. Brian, how are you doing today?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good, thanks.
Good.
All right. So as we learned, all episodes are available for streaming if you are subscribed to the PBS system somehow, whatever. Otherwise, these are airing terrestrially on your local PBS station from as of, what was it, the 16th of Sunday until Friday the 21st.
Yeah.
Fortunately, we can both watch the streamed episodes, so we don't have to stay up to the wee hours to get these podcasts out. And it, we're kind of following into a rhythm of doing the sort of the day after reflections, which is good. Again, these are going to be a little bit more different. We're trying to turn these around a lot faster to get them out the door. And these are more reactions than analysis like we do for a lot of the shows and movies that we normally cover. Once the series concludes, Brian and I, we're going to get together for a special series wrap-up with our dear friend and favorite Tolkien scholar, Marilyn R. Pukila. Listeners to the Lorehounds community and will have heard Marilyn on any number of podcasts. And the great thing is, not only is she a Tolkien and mythology and history scholar, in a sense, she was a research librarian. So yeah. She has a lot of access to a lot of information, and she lived in the Northeast. So she's grown up in and around this history. So it'll be really fun to talk to her. Feedback for us on this will just be our generic email address, lorehounds@thelorehounds.com. We got a piece of feedback email today, which is great. We'll read that in a second.
Yeah, that's good.
As always, you're welcome to join us on our Discord server. We've got a channel set up just for the American Revolution. A lot of conversation happening. Really great. I'm very surprised to see all of it. People are really engaging with the material.
Yeah, we are now moving. We're in high gear.
Yes, it's true. As always, if you appreciate the podcast and you want to support us and all of the creators in our network, please subscribe. You can subscribe either on Patreon or Supercast. You get ad-free episodes. You get a lot of our bonus material, sort of our inside the community stuff, movie club things, and other podcasts and bonus podcasts. And it just helps independent creators like us be able to continue do what we do. As always, Please rate and review the podcast. If you've got anything nice to say, we'd love to see that on Apple Podcasts. We have a huge affiliate network. We've got a lot of other podcasts. Mm-hmm. Links for all of that stuff are in the show notes. There's a link tree. You go there, and it's a little webpage that has links to all of the various things. Brian is a professional historian. If you want to hear more about his background, check out the intro for episode 1. And then Brian also brought us a template, which we're using every show to think about the episode so that we're not just sort of splashing around, but we have some structure to it. Brian, now that we've got all that intro stuff out of the way, I try to really minimize it, but there's a lot of stuff we want to say. So
yeah.
Sometimes I want to speed run it. We've kind of fallen in this pattern of reflecting when we watch the new episode, what we are reflecting on for the series so far in the previous episodes. So now that we've finished episode 3, what are your thoughts on the series so far and any new insights into episodes 1 or 2?
Yeah. Thanks, David, for letting me on here.
Letting you on. I mean, Brian, so who else could I do that?
That's right. What are you going to do?
And John and I originally came from a community. Alicia, it was also in the community. It's just part of our nature to include our community in our conversations and deliberations. And so absolutely. I just am really appreciative of the fact that you were keen on doing this, because I think it's adding a lot to our community and to the kinds of conversations that we're having. It's not just laser guns and dragons, but we're, because I think the Lorehound people in this community are people who are intellectually inquisitive and want to spend time thinking and talking with other people about the ideas that they encounter in the world.
Yeah.
And a lot of times we do that through our fictional media, but it's great to talk about some real history from time to time. So.
Exactly. Instead of lasers, we've got muskets.
Yes.
So I think One of the things I've been thinking about as we move into three and looking back on two is that Burns is definitely in his element. And I, what I mean by that, you know, I read a interview with him and he admits that this is a military history, which is stamped with Vietnam, his series that was only, you know, a few years ago. And
look at this here, a little physical media. You can't see this, dear listener, but I'm holding up my copy of the Vietnam War 10-disc CD, DVD series.
Yes, yes. And it follows the same pattern that we're seeing in this series, where it's bringing more voices to the Vietnam War. It's not just Americans, which is really important. And so we're seeing now, as we move into three, he has developed a rhythm of battles using CGI maps, those images, some documents, reenactors, that for people who are fans of Burns and his work, we can really relate to. And so he's kind of in his groove, I see, on the second and moving into the third one.
Gotcha.
Yeah, yeah. And I also will say, thinking back on our great conversation that we've been having on Discord and feedback, is that it's you're beginning to appreciate, and we'll see how much, you know, will happen as we go forward, there has to be a connection between what's happening in the military and what's happening in Congress. You have the political and you have the military.
Okay.
And you can't have, you know, you can't have one without the other. Mm-hmm. So we're beginning to see that in episode two, as Congress is trying to figure out what to do, declare independence, but George Washington is walking around with his uniform, right? Ambitious, right? So you've got that connection that I'm kind of thinking about as we look back.
Got it.
Yeah.
Cool. All right. I think it's interesting to see some of the comments in the Discord as people are catching up with watching. The nice thing about having it available is that people can watch it in their own time, which works in a modern context. I do miss the mono event, you know, monocultural event kind of thing all coming together. That's kind of what we thought this was going to be.
Yeah.
So there's some flexibility for life, but it's interesting to see what people are saying as they catch up. And a bunch of the comments were about episode one. People were just like, oh, whoa, like, man, like, I didn't realize we were going to speed run that, but it was sort of necessary because, you know, as we talked about, this is about the American Revolutionary War, right? And not the Seven Years' War or about any other topic, social or, you know, whatever topics you want. So this is really, we're really now in it. And as we see, the episodes are slowing down, the time frames that they're covering are compressing to tell coherent parts of the story.
Yeah, you know, it's like a mad sprint in the beginning.
Yes.
But then you slow down for a walk.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And interestingly enough, I had, was thinking about that, how much story was packed in, and then in the first episode, and then even in episode two and episode three, there's so much, the density of material. And when we read this feedback, there's so much stuff that's left on the table that they had to make editorial choices about what's important to the story. What is the story that we're telling and what's important to that story that moves us forward? And boy, I cannot imagine how hard it was for them to make those editorial decisions.
That must have been extremely
painful,
right? It's your baby.
Yeah.
And no wonder it took 10 years.
And you're recovering stuff from the where are the primary sources for this and how do you extract that information? I was thinking about the Vietnam War documentary. I don't think I've seen the whole thing. And now that I think about it, I don't know that I've watched a Ken Burns documentary in quite a while. I mean, I know him. I remember watching the Revolutionary War one a long time ago, but I can't think of the last time I actually fully engaged in a Ken Burns documentary. So I grabbed my physical media. Hey, that's a thing. I grabbed my DVD box set looking at it and I was wondering, how long is it? And I did a quick internet check. That's an 18-hour documentary across 10 parts, 10 episodes.
Interesting. Interesting.
And they had video, they have photographic and film archives, as well as contemporary newspapers and people who are still alive to talk about those events and triangulate on what the circumstances and facts were of a number of different, things that they would have covered in there. Where this story, man, like how do you do that? That's what you do.
Yeah.
What you do, Brian, on your day job.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. You're trying to constantly think about what you're reading, how it fits into the big picture of a story or a hypothesis, an argument. And in my case, I'm actually creating those documents, doing oral histories. So we're basically creating those primary documents for people to go back years later to use for whatever they're working on.
When we get to the wrap up, we should talk to you a little bit more about what your day job looks like on a day to day basis. It doesn't make any sense to me. It's not driven to quarterly sales. It's not, it's not necessarily connected to how many widgets did we, we got to set up the new widget factory. And so that's a whole thing.
Yeah.
Or delivering lines of code or what have you, or this television show or, these commercials that we have to put out. So I'd be really curious to learn a little bit more at what it's like to be a historian on a day-to-day basis. So maybe we'll do that in the wrap-up pod.
Sure.
Great. Well, we did get a piece of feedback, and I was really excited when it landed this morning. So this is from Mama Chris. That's how she signed off her email. And Mama Chris says, good morning, and thank you so much for covering the American Revolution. Also, thank you for having on one of my fellow historic interpreter professionals on your podcast. It's a low-paying, low-thanks, specialized skill job that doesn't get enough credit. So thank you.
Thank you, Mama Chris. Absolutely. I'm right there with you.
Yep. So continuing, back in the spring, PBS North Carolina and America 250 hosted Ken Burns in Raleigh. Raleigh Revolutionary War historic sites. Oh, I see what she's saying here. Sites were also invited to show up in costume, do a small living history demonstration, and be there for photos of Ken Burns shaking our hands. It was a very cool experience for us. I'm really disappointed that he has completely left out North Carolina's contributions to the revolutions. And I think this goes into what we were just saying just now. The editorial process must have been excruciating.
Yes. I wonder how much of North Carolina was on the cutting room floor.
So continuing her email, he did not mention the Edenton Tea Party.
Yep.
The first documented organized protest by women in North America. He also left out the Battle of Moore's Creek, a skirmish between loyalists recruited by Flora McDonald to fight against the Sons of Liberty. And the big one, the Halifax Resolves passed on, the Resolves of Halifax, Halifax Resolves passed on April 12th, 1776 by the Fourth Provincial Congress. The first of these actions authorizing their delegates in Philadelphia to vote for independence. The Halifax Resolves started the domino effect that led to the Declaration of Independence. It is the reason why when you drive around North Carolina, you see signs and license plates that say, first in freedom. Oh. She goes on to say a couple more things and said, let me read her email. This is a long and you don't have to read it on air or anything like that. Of course I do. We try to make sure we read everything.
That's right.
I just needed to get it off my chest, she says. I'm attaching a picture of me in my 18th century dress. I won't say which historic site I work at. I'll let you guess. Mama Chris. Mama Chris, thank you so much for writing in. That was a really sweet email. It was fun to get. And hopefully we'll hear from you some more.
Yeah.
And anyone else who wants to share just anything, even just a snippet or a half-formed thought, don't worry about polish or, spelling, punctuation, doesn't matter. Just, send in a voicemail, send in an email. It's absolutely great. Brian, can you guess where she works?
My guess would be I wonder if she works at in Halifax.
Okay.
Somewhere. Yeah.
I only know Halifax. There's a Halifax, Vermont, and then there's a Halifax, Nova Scotia.
Right.
So
right.
I didn't know there was another Halifax.
Yeah.
There must be a Halifax in the UK somewhere.
I bet you. Yeah. I would not be surprised.
Where is Halifax? Yeah. Because a lot of these names
are going to be coming from. Yeah.
Okay. Well, so that we don't get, they don't come for us with pitchforks and torches. I'm going to look up the word Halifax really quick to see what I can find. Okay. Why don't you tell us a little bit more about the Edenton Tea Party, the Battle of Morse Creek, and the Halifax Resolves?
Okay. Thank you, David. Absolutely, Mama Chris. You raise up such an important thing that I think we just speed raced past. I vaguely remember Burns saying a little bit about North Carolina, some battle or two, and then they gave up. So the Edenton Tea Party, October 25th, 1774, Mrs. Penelope Barker organized a boycott of tea in response to the Tea Act of 1773.
Okay.
And in fact, this tea party was actually on the website. I did some Googles myself, and it's on the Boston Tea Party website.
Okay.
So people apparently know about this. And because there is a strong tradition, cultural tradition, even stronger than the Middle States and New England in the South with Britain and the social structure of North Carolina and South Carolina, tea was a big deal, right? So it's the kind of tea you had, the amount of tea, the higher the quality. So you want that British tea. It was a big deal.
Okay.
So she
British tea.
British tea.
Imported by Britain.
Yes.
Grown or harvested or packaged by British.
Yuck.
Right.
No, that's like water.
Well, no. I mean, like... It's British tea. Britain doesn't grow tea.
Yeah, that's true.
They're the mercantile aspect of it.
That's right.
It comes from somewhere else.
So. Exactly. That's so true. Right. It's the, shall we say, maybe the British Empire tea.
Yeah, yeah. The tea of the British Empire.
Yeah, right. Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, that was, I guess the English kind of mocked the boycott, but the Americans, colonists, knew about this boycott throughout all the colonies. So that's very cool, very important there. And
kind of makes me think of, too, when we talk about mythology and history or the mythologization of history, when we think about what is one of the most high-profile civil rights moments that we have is Rosa Parks on the bus. But I believe there was another woman there, and I believe that there had been all kinds of other protests. So this was not a spontaneous...
No.
And I'm not saying anything about Rosa Parks or displacing her in a little bit, but there's a whole bunch of other instances of other kinds of protests and other people involved. And what happens is through the course of history, I'm not being authoritative about this statement. I'm just saying it's a downstream recipient of history. What did I get taught? I got taught one element of one part of the story. So somehow, somewhere through the process, there was an editing down of, and a presentation about one element of a very complex history. And then that's the totemic, case that is used to, whenever we leverage story, right? This is the one leverage point of this, of part of the story. Does that make sense?
This does.
Is one example.
Yeah,
this is a powerful example, but it's only one example of maybe 20 or 50 things that were going on.
Yes. And we could talk like an hour and a half on the history education in this country and the power of textbooks. So if you have to choose something in this area, Boston Tea Party usually makes the cut, but not the one in North Carolina.
Right. Right. Well, maybe we'll talk a little bit about that with Marilyn as well.
So yeah. Yeah.
Marilyn is listening and she's furiously making notes. She's like, oh God, we got to talk about another thing. Right. We're loading up that podcast. That might be a 3-hour podcast.
That might be. That might be. We move on. We're doing this. We build up to the Battle of Morse Creek Bridge. This was February 27th, 1776. And in the South, there are more loyalists than in the Middle Kingdom.
In the Middle Atlantic.
In the Middle Line, yes.
Yeah.
In
the North. Okay, okay. Now that we're on the other side of Halloween, I'm officially ready to declare it. It's the holiday season. And shopping early this year is definitely a good idea with all of the shipping uncertainties. Luckily, Uncommon Goods takes the stress out of gifting with thousands of unique, high-quality finds you won't see anywhere else, so that you can cross the important names off your list and relax. You might have heard me say it before, but I've been known to turn to Uncommon Goods over the years for gifts, especially for my family and close friends, the people I want to treat to something unique, memorable, handmade by creative entrepreneurs, something that will last. I've especially plundered the puzzle categories, bought lots of unusual jewelry and accessories. One time I got my friend's son these little baby booties shaped like tacos that still make me laugh every time I see a picture of them. And bonus, with every purchase you make at Uncommon Goods, they give $1 to a nonprofit partner of your choice. They've donated more than $3.1 million to date, so now is the perfect time to start exploring their site before your new favorite gifts sell out. And while you can take advantage of the limited-time Lorehounds discounts and get 15% off. So don't wait. Cross those names off your list before the rush. To get 15% off your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/lorehounds. That's uncommongoods.com/lorehounds for 15% off. Uncommon Goods. We're all out of the ordinary.
Northeast.
Yes, exactly.
It sounds like there weren't many loyalists in the Northeast.
Yeah, no. There was much stronger connection, less popular.
Interesting. I wonder if that has to do too with, there could be some climate things, but it's also closer to the Caribbean,
yes,
and to the slave trade and the trade in enslaved peoples,
yeah,
as well,
rice.
As that's where a lot of the commodities are being grown, processed, and shipped from.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. So you really have, they were very dependent on the British trade, more, even more than up north.
Gotcha.
Exactly.
Okay.
So there was like over 1,800 forces. That's big.
Okay.
That actually fought in this battle.
Okay.
And the British Royal Governor wanted to reassert control in North Carolina. So he got help from the British and got more loyalists. And they basically fought on that particular day. And the Patriot commander opened fire with rifle and artillery and just blew the loyalists right out of the water, out of that bridge. And it was a Patriot victory.
Okay.
And because of that, it really kind of lit a fire for the Second Continental Congress to say, hey, we could do this. You know, this is an actual pretty big victory.
Gotcha.
I'm kind of reminded of Lincoln, right? Trying to do with the Emancipation Proclamation. He needed a victory, right? So it's like, oh, well, let's see if we can get a victory, and then I'll do this Emancipation Proclamation, you know, kind of a echo.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a proof of concept.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's evidence that it's possible.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You got it. Well cool. Said.
Okay.
Yeah. And finally, the Halifax Resolves, the local state legislature, the provincial Congress, convened in April after the Moores Creek Bridge. So we have one thing on top of another.
Okay.
And they created a committee. They wrote this document, and they handed it off to the North Carolina representative at the Continental Congress.
Mm-hmm.
And that also helped spark debate about, yes, we can actually create a Declaration of Independence. And I can imagine it's definitely something that Jefferson probably would have read.
Right.
It's part of that ether that he was reading and thinking about as he sat down in June of 1776 to write the Declaration of Independence. So it's a huge, important document, again, and it was published throughout the colonies.
Right. So, and you talked, the previous episode about the power of written ideas.
Yes, exactly.
And how they spread and how they were able to, it makes sense in a way if you have a purely oral tradition, there's a percentage number of people who are interested, willing, and capable of going out and reciting history, singing the songs, you know, traveling the countryside to share the news, so to speak. But with a piece of paper, a pamphlet, you can distribute, and then people can read it in their own time. They don't have to go somewhere, right? It is accessible. The information and the ideas are accessible in more, exponentially more possibilities.
Yes.
For the
yes.
spread of the idea.
That's right. And you can read it privately. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe it's safer to read it at a pamphlet.
Very good point.
Right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Instead of showing up and you're walking by and there's a speaker on a soapbox and you stop to listen and there's agents of the, you know, of the king or whomever.
Yeah.
Sort of secretly writing down who is there. Oh, I remember. I know that guy. I know that guy. I know that guy. And then, you know, maybe you're going to get stitched up by, you know, later on, whereas you could find this pamphlet laying on the ground or, you know, in a coffee shop or something like that. You put it in your pocket and read it at home.
Yeah.
You kind of like listening to jazz at night in, you know, communist countries during the Cold War, you know, to radio, right? That was broadcast Voice of America, pour one out. So yeah, it's interesting, the spread of ideas. I had a note later on, and we can talk about it more a bit later, but pamphlets as the social media of the day.
I remember you writing that in our notes. I think that's really well said.
Yeah,
it was exactly that.
I don't think we talked about it. Yeah, I think I had it in my notes yesterday, but I don't think we talked about it. I don't remember where it's all a blur right now, but I've got it again in my notes today.
Perfect.
So cool. All right. Well, Halifax, so it turns out that Halifax is a town in West Yorkshire, England. Yorkshire. Yorkshire. Hi, I'm an American. Sorry, everybody. And then, of course, it's a British banking brand, and Halifax, Nova Scotia. And then there's a Halifax, Vermont as well. So, right. Well, let's move it along. So we're here to talk about episode 3. This is entitled The Times That Try Men's. Oh, I didn't copy it all off. It must've been, where did it go?
Soul.
Yeah. Souls. It must be souls, right?
Yeah.
My cut and paste. I was short on my cut and paste. This is covering the period of July 1776 to January 1777. So nigh but 7 months after 20 years, over 20 years of history in episode 1.
Slow motion.
Yeah. So this is covering the Battle of Sullivan's Creek, the war in Cherokee Country, the Battle of Long Island, Brooklyn. Sorry, I'm being silly, everybody. The Battle of Kips Bay, the Battle of White Plains, the Battle of Fort Washington, Washington crossing the Delaware, and then the Battle of Trenton. I want to share one thing really quick. Sunday night, we were busy. We had a bunch of stuff going on. And then Monday night, I was on that business trip to Boston. So last night was the first night that I and my family were sort of in one place for dinner time, et cetera. So I started watching it just because I was going to. My daughter was on the couch playing on her iPad, playing her, you know, during her, she gets a couple hours a day to do some screen time stuff. And I was like, I'll just watch it in the background because I know nobody's going to object.
Right.
And then we suddenly decided, well, let's have dinner in front of the TV. We only do that like one or two nights a week. And so let's watch tonight. And we watched as a family, and my daughter stuck with the thing the whole way through. She didn't get bored or want to go do something else. And so it was kind of cool. And so I think we're going to do that again tonight for episode 4.
Excellent. That tells you something about how Burns storytelling.
Right. Well, and she kept looking for references for Hamilton. We'll talk about that in a minute. So another thing that cropped up for me too was the etymology of the word America.
Yeah, this is new to me.
Okay.
This is new to me. I have, you know, I haven't really dug in the weeds. I as well. As soon as you said that, it's like, okay, let me Google that as well.
Yeah.
And what did you find?
So this is based on internet searching only. So if other people have more authoritative or validated information, please let us know.
Yeah.
But the quick answer is that it probably, because it sounds like there may be some discussion about actually what happened, but that it's probably originates from the Latinized version of the name of an Italian explorer, Amerigo Vespucci, also known as Americus Vespucius in Latin. And so it's a derivation of his name, Amerigo. I know I didn't dig much further than that. And it seemed like there was some, I don't want to say it's not contradictory, but there's some other possibilities that exist that people have brought up. But it sounds like it might be related to this Italian explorer.
Nice. Yeah. And looking at the internets quickly, he took on numerous voyages into, like Brazil and Central America.
Okay.
Some of the Caribbean even. So he's early.
Okay.
Interesting.
All right. So yeah, if anyone has more information about that, would write in and we can put that on our next episode whenever we get that information.
Outstanding. I want to ask you a question, David, because you lived in New York City for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And as you lived there, did you ever run across museums or exhibits, markers, statues of the Revolution? I mean, Hamilton, of course, but...
last night, as we were watching the episode, my wife and I kept looking at each other because they would mention a location or a name. And my wife lived in New York for much longer. We lived in Brooklyn.
Okay.
She was there much longer than I was. I was only there for a few years, but I felt very at home there. And we were just constantly like, like that name. Oh, Kip Spence. Oh, yeah. Right. It was really the Gowanus. Oh, Jamaica Plain. You know, And yeah, it was very, I had no idea where you just live with these place names.
Yeah.
You're just like, oh, okay. You know, this is what this place is called, Gowanus. I don't know, Gowanus Canal. Okay, whatever. No idea that it's a major revolutionary battle. I do remember when my daughter was young and I was in Prospect Park on a dad walk with our strollers or whatever. There was this one part of the loop we'd always go by, and there's like a big rock outcropping, and there's a plaque there. And I remember stopping and reading the plaque one day that there was something about some battle that happened at this spot. And I was just like, huh, that's interesting, and kept walking. So,
yeah, it is amazing that if where you live, you know, the history is all around you, but you don't necessarily soak it up a lot of times until you leave.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or like I said yesterday, when I was walking around Boston the other day, I was seeing all these statues and all this other kind of stuff. I was like, who's that? Like, you know, it really made me question. So, yeah.
Great. Yeah. Great. Thanks.
All right. Well, why don't you run us through our questions for the episode?
Perfect. All right. Let's start it off. So what things stood out?
I think one of the things that stood out for me, well, definitely the place names of Brooklyn and Manhattan, right, just as we talked about. The idea, why were the colonizers so strident and fervent? And if I, you know, thinking about it, there's no open land in Europe left for anyone. So they show up there and it's just open land. And as far as they perceive, it's uninhabited. It's because they're looking for cultivation. They're looking for structure, mills and bakeries and roads and farmlands and orchards and stuff like that. Whereas Native American populations had a whole different subsistence living, you know, a different pattern of living on the land. So it's not to say that it wasn't used, but they didn't see the evidence in the way that their framework would allow them to see it. And they were like, this is open for the taking. There is no way back home I would have ever had this opportunity. And so that really stood out to me in this story, is like, why are people so riled up?
Yes. Yes. And I am always amazed. Don't want to get too off track, but I'm always amazed. I always try to imagine the first generation forests that these colonists saw as they moved into these territories. I can't even, I guess, redwood trees, maybe,
redwoods,
right, out in California?
Yeah. Well, you'd have to go for old growth forest in the Pacific Northwest and on the West Coast. Wow. So, yeah, some redwoods, Olympics. And I don't know how much is really left of any old growth.
Yeah.
We have very few remnants of that. Yes. The entire eastern seaboard was logged, flattened, completely stripped.
Totally. Yeah. Yeah. Trees that you can't wrap your arms around.
Yeah.
That's why here on the East Coast. And it's like, wow.
And it was used for firewood. It was used for shipping.
Shipping.
It, yeah. Yep. You know, timbers for building homes.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's a really.
Right.
Yeah. Mind-blowing.
Yeah.
Mind-blowing. Yeah. Yeah.
Something that I think we both had in our notes was a Dunkirk situation in Brooklyn.
Yes. I was thinking the same thing. It's like people just coming out with their boats, whatever sizes, whatever shapes, just come on and get these soldiers. It's like, this is Dunkirk.
Yeah, exactly. Whatever you can, whatever can float, get it down here and let's move us. And then you think about moving field pieces and horses and all these soldiers with their rifles and their packs and everything.
Cannons.
Ugh, yeah.
Heavy cannons.
Crazy. Yeah. And then, you know, you think about today, I don't know, I just, you know, cross the Manhattan Bridge or cross the Brooklyn Bridge or take the subway. You're just like, what? It's no big deal. That waterway, that is a fast flowing body of water right there.
Oh, is it?
It is no easy feat. It is big. It is deep. It has an incredible flow. And I can only imagine the effort that it took to actually cross that in a rowboat as it was. You stand on the down there at Brooklyn Bridge Park now, and you see a volume of water that's flowing. Man, I have no idea what that would have been like.
No, and they did it. Some of these rowboats, you did it back and forth, back and forth.
Yeah,
it's really hard to imagine.
Yeah,
yeah.
So I think the other thing that stood out for me was that so many decisive moments were lost or wasted. You know, I forget the British general's name on the Battle of Long Island in Brooklyn. Where they're that's okay. You know, let them run. We're going to catch up to them eventually. It's like, no, you could have smashed them right there. Same, I think, on Manhattan. There was a couple of times where they could have just decapitated the patriotic forces and ended the thing, you know, in an instant. Or maybe was it on the Battle of Lake Champlain? We'll talk about this again later, but they didn't pursue them. They're like, oh, it's night, it's foggy. Yeah, we'll just have dinner. And then people slipped away. Right. So there's so many decisive moments that in the moment somebody makes a decision that seems rational to them. But then in history, in hindsight, we look and we go, gosh, you could have finished the whole thing right here, right there and then.
Yes. And it's in part, it's, I think, a belief, at least by the British side, that they will fall apart on their own. They're done for, you know, they're going to be scared. They're going to be hungry. We'll get them later or they'll just fall apart. And it's interesting you mention that, because for the thing that stood out, one of the things that stood out for me is this thought experiment. So let's imagine that we're General Howe, so we're commander of the British troops in colonial America, and along with our brother, Admiral Howell, who runs the naval operations for the entire British America, we are the designated peace commissioners.
Okay.
How is that going to affect your strategy if you're both a general and a peace commissioner?
Interesting.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Am I going to go out and totally wipe out this force? Well, no. Are you? Because you got to, you know, I think your mentality is like you're going to argue with yourself. Oh, should I stop? No, don't stop. We've got, I'm on the run. No, I should stop and we got to get a peace negotiation going. Oh, that's a good point. You know, there's a reason, right? There's a reason there's diplomats, civilians mm-hmm. versus the military, right?
That's interesting. I was just watching A House of Dynamite on Netflix the other day.
Yes.
Which is a very interesting film. Did you watch it?
I did.
Okay. And the general is like, okay, you're the civilian. You're supposed to be thinking these thoughts.
Yes.
And you need to make your decision. But I'm the general, and my job is to launch the missiles. So you're either going to tell me to launch the missiles or not launch the missiles. It's not my job to think about the peace options. It's not my job to second guess what's really going on and, you know, think through the various. I'm just the guy that actually gives the, you know, that makes sure that the orders are dispersed and are being followed. That's my job. And exactly. If I try to get into a second guessing game about who did what and who, or maybe who instigated something to blame somebody else or whatever, then I'm going to be ineffective at my job, which is to kill the enemy. That's what the military's job is. Kill the enemy, period.
Bingo.
And if you get into anything more complex, then I think you're right. That's a really interesting insight that by designating the Howes as both the ambassadors for the king, as much as the troop commanders, that's a conflicting, and then you bind it up with aristocracy.
Yes.
Right? Officers are paroled and you treat them like gentlemen, and you have Ben Franklin and a couple of other folks come and sit down for a beautiful candlelight dinner that's probably very sumptuous and it's all very civilized and normal.
With wine.
Yeah. This is the enemy, right? You know, you're supposed to, you know. So it's interesting. I think it's a really interesting point. I didn't thought about that.
Yeah.
I like it.
Yeah.
Cool. What else?
Excellent. So I've got a myth busting. We talk about mythology.
Right. Mm-hmm.
What stands out for this myth is that George Washington is as a general is on a very high pedestal. And in this episode, you really see that actually he's not a perfect general.
Mm-hmm.
Right, the fact that he split his armies twice in New York, not once, but twice, which is a big no-no. And of course, you mentioned the Jamaica Pass, which mm-hmm. was like, wow, that is huge.
Not huge even mistake. Have a little picket line out there or a little forward observation post or something.
Right,
so that you can redeploy, you know, if you saw forces coming.
Yeah.
Because there's all kinds of ruses happening in these battles. It's a normal part of what they would have studied and practiced.
Exactly.
So he should have been aware of that.
Exactly. Exactly.
History is a harsh judge, man.
It is. It is. We were so lucky. We were so lucky in that battle. Yeah. Holy smokes.
And then what like I was saying before, a missed opportunity. Once they got across to Manhattan, they're like, hey, we'll get them. It's cool.
Yeah,
you could have smashed them. You could have brought up here we are relitigating the war. I'm sure this has been plenty of times, you know, brought up some ships to block off Brooklyn Heights, and then you would have had a hammer and anvil kind of motion. So,
yeah. Yeah. I think if one of those things you'll mention later about luck, you know, there was just storm that delayed Admiral Howe.
It's on my notes.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but that doesn't necessarily mean that he could have done it just like maybe a day later.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, that's right. I forgot that's what was going on was that storm. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Anyway. All right. What else?
And finally, a new generation of Native Americans mm-hmm. want to fight in this war compared to their elders.
Oh,
so you begin to see that little civil war of thought of a really difficult decision-making in these tribes. Do we fight? Do we negotiate? What do we do?
Right.
Yeah.
Interesting. Cool.
Great. Okay. So let's dive into what did you like?
Two things that I liked a lot in this were, I'm really digging the CGI maps and the CGI representations.
Me too.
It helps so much, especially watching the Battle of Brooklyn, seeing the terrain, seeing the little town, seeing all the way down to the fields. It's very video gamey in some regards, but I think it just really works to display the, and like I said, I haven't engaged with a Ken Burns documentary in quite a while, so I don't remember what they did in the past or what he's done recently. So coming to it a little bit fresh, I'm really, it's just a really helpful aid.
It is. It is. So it's so good. So helpful. When I'm watching the series, I have an atlas of the American Revolution in front of me, but those maps are just so much better.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
The other thing that I found really, that I really like about this is in the voiceover narrations. And now it's like a little bit of a game. If we can guess who was that actor. Oh, that was Keith David. Oh, that was, what did we see, hear the other day? Oh, we Giamatti's reading somebody else differently or something.
Yeah.
You know, we watched the credits a little bit to see if we could pick some of the names.
That's right.
But just the eloquence of some of the letters that they're reading, the word choices, the turn of phrase, not everybody, but the stuff that they're giving us, there's just an eloquence in the language we don't have anymore.
No, we don't. And that's really a great point that was their main communication. It was a skill that they lived right from the beginning as soon as they were writing, and people would write letters. And that's just one of the joys of doing research in that time period of seven, you know, all the way until the modern era, these beautiful letters, just so, so good.
Now you don't send an email with without any punctuation, just one line, whatever. It's just like,
and an emoji.
Yeah, exactly. Totally.
100%. Yeah. Yeah. Awesome.
What about you?
So I enjoyed the story at the end about the boy returning to Boston to see his family. And I thought that was
Pfeiffer?
Yes.
Kid, yeah. Right. Didn't he walked all the way back to Maine, I thought.
He walked all the way. Yeah. Kind of a cold mountain kind of experience.
What the hell?
I know. It's just amazing that I had to do a double take. It's like, let me rewind. Mm. Oh, he did walk. It wasn't, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
That was really a kind of a heartwarming story. Right. I like that.
Cool.
And then I love the framing of the Continental Congress on the main floor and the Pennsylvania delegates upstairs with their radical constitution.
Scaring the bejesus out of the people downstairs.
That's right. Freaks John Adams out.
Right.
It's like, what? What are you talking about? So that was just, you know, using the picture, the window and the staircase, it just all came together really, really well.
Nice.
I loved it.
Cool.
Okay. And the final myth busting for me was the Hessians were not drunk at Trenton. Okay. So it's a pretty common myth that they were drinking and partying because it was Christmas. But actually, that was not true, which makes the attack even more impressive that they weren't.
Okay.
You know, yeah.
I didn't realize that was something that was out there as a belief about that. So
yeah, exactly.
And I think, Will, maybe that's something. Maybe I'm going to put that down in my surprise. Okay, I'm going to add a note there. Okay, carry on.
Okay, cool. Okay, so to balance things out, what did you dislike? And I can kind of go first while you're typing. So I didn't have anything really in the beginning, actually, as we were doing our notes together. But then I remember the excellent discussion on Discord. And I was talking, I think, with Marilyn about the fringes of the colonial, the colonies. So people, places like out west, but also in some of the Spanish colonies, like Florida, New Orleans, there's these little fringe places. And one of the talking heads actually wrote an excellent book, The Lost Independence, I believe it's called. And I wanted, you know, it's like, oh, I want more of that. Why don't you just, you know, kind of spread the picture out a little bit. I need a little bit more would be even better.
Got it.
But that's okay. About it.
Okay. I didn't have much either. Just that he hasn't mentioned Hamilton at all.
Yes.
And I know he knows Lin-Manuel Miranda because in an interview that I heard with him, he said he was, you know, somewhere with him and they were doing a big thing for school kids around the show. And my daughter is sitting there on the couch and she's like, but okay, this is when Hamilton should have done this. He should have taken the cannons, you know, he should have saved the cannons in Manhattan. And then when he was with him there, he should have been, you know, doing the logistics and letter writing. And where's Lafayette? And on and on. And it's amazing to me that she has been able to lift out of the salient facts and, yes. and details from a musical, and she is now actively applying them to a soporific documentary by Ken Burns, but tracking it and going, okay, this is this point, and I know this from this other source, and I'm not getting that light, you know, I'm not seeing the connection between the two. Just again, editorial choices that they made. But I'm really right. surprised that there is zero mention of Hamilton, because it would be a great, even just a little mention or a nod
yes.
would take all the Hamilton musical fans and light them up.
Exactly.
So
exactly. You got to pull them in.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the magic of Hamilton.
It really is.
Yeah. So. Okay. So shifting gears a bit, what would you want to know more about?
This is where my list has grown a little bit. And I think on the top of my list is the Loyalist purges and tribunals that they were having. That sounds very yes. scary.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
There are these, and we've seen this in other countries and in other times, in the French Revolution,
yeah.
in Indochina. In China, you know, Russia, you know, all over the places. And I didn't realize that. I was kind of surprised and shocked by that the patriots and the loyal, like this would go down, that, you know, people were suspicious of each other and they were trying to purge and hold these tribunals to identify them and then ostracize them.
Yeah. Was that the time they throw someone in the mine? Am I right?
That too, that's imprisoning. Yeah. But then there are other times where they were just trying to find them and then, yeah. you know, purge them from society.
Yes. Yeah, exactly.
Them out or imprison them or what okay. have you. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's part of that revolutionary element, right? Where you have everything is, those ideas are absolute. And mm-hmm. you could not have anything outside of that to threaten the revolution. So you have to act. And unfortunately, right, it becomes very violent and cruel. And right.
And we see this tendency over and over again. I'm just thinking now mm-hmm. about the camps that were set up for Japanese American citizens during World War II. We're like, oh, mm-hmm. you know, we got a box. You know, there's this tendency to purge anything that might be a threat from within.
Yes.
And whether that is from an intellectual concept or from a physiological outward appearance, well, you look like this, therefore you're part of that culture, right?
Yes.
However you do your assessment, this idea that you're trying to isolate and box up and remove from your midst.
That's right. That's right. The first Red Scare, the McCarthy mm-hmm. hearing, you know.
Right. Yeah. Huh, maybe there's a little pattern here, Brian.
Yeah.
there's a pattern happening.
It is.
another thing that I was curious about was all the other activity that was happening on the West Coast. There was a mention of Russia, and there was a mention of, you know, stuff on the West Coast and in Mexico and in Spain. I was like, okay, so there's a lot of activity on the Eastern Seaboard. And then suddenly there's a whole bunch of activity on the West. And then he didn't say anything more about it. I was like, wait, yeah. what?
yeah. 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 The Russians, I think, were moving around, right? They were, you know, Alaska.
Yeah. I remember seeing an arrow on a map moving across towards Alaska. I'm like, wait a minute. Wait, what? And then he's like, West Coast, and then Spain, Mexico. And then we flick back. And I'm like, wait, go back.
Yeah.
Rewind.
Exactly. So. Hit the pause button. I was like, yeah.
But it's the Revolutionary War, right? It's not global history of the 1700s. It's, you know, this is a Revolutionary War documentary. So.
That's right.
I've got a couple more things, but why don't you go with a couple of yours?
Okay. So I want to learn more about women fighting as men.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Same thing. You just kind of knew there was some interesting picture of it, you know, a portrait, mm-hmm. and we moved on. But it's right. like, that's really interesting because it happens in the Civil War as well.
Oh, really?
And yeah. And it's like, I want to learn more. I want to learn more. Yeah.
Makes me think of Eowyn from Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, exactly.
Marilyn, speaking to you here through the podcast, mm-hmm. through time. So,
sending vibes.
That interesting. A note that I had too was sort of when they did talk about, and women were more present in the story of episode 3. in talking about what was going on for them away from the battlefields and having all the men gone. And I just had popped into my head, Rosie the Riveter of the Revolution, right? There are women constantly step up and have to take on all of these chores and activities and processes that are normally coded as, you know, men's jobs. And suddenly nobody's around, no men around to do it. So we got to do it. And it's normal. It's fine. We're just people. We just do the things that need to be done. And then the men come back and then it's, you know, social strife there.
Yeah. I'm again reminded of the, because I just saw this not that long ago, the movie Cold Mountain.
Where, I don't think I've seen it ever.
Yeah. Yeah. With Nicole Kidman and Jude Law. And she is a kind of a, you know, a elite person that, you know, has father dies and she has to run the farm and she didn't know how to do that. So she learns and is quite good at it. So it's one of those common threads that, yeah, when the men soldiers walk off, and literally walk off. They it's just amazing how much territory they cover.
Yeah. It's wild. Wild.
They have to fend for themselves. Yeah. And it's a challenge, but they rise to that challenge.
Out of Africa is on our list of movies that are being voted on by subscribers right now for our next 11Z's movie club. And there's a case of a woman who has to take on running a farm when she wasn't equipped for that to start off with. So
there you go.
Interesting.
Perfect. Yeah.
What else you got?
Let's see. That's it for learning more about. Do you have any couple other things? Wait,
what's this Marblehead?
Oh, how could I forget the Marbleheads? Oh my gosh. Yes. I want to learn more about the Marbleheads.
Okay. These, I don't know about them.
Yeah. There's this. Yeah. It's the group in, I believe, Massachusetts. John Glover, I think, is the colonel, 14th Regiment. Mm-hmm. And they were just amazing. They were just an amazing group of, you know, their skills were called upon. And
is this the forces that went out and okay, I missed part of that.
Yeah, they worked. They were the ones who worked in Brooklyn, and then the ones in Trenton. So,
and that was a point that they made in the documentary: is that anywhere there's water is where there's going to be battles, basically.
Yeah. Yes. Exactly. Yeah. Right. Yeah, it's so much more efficient to load up your troops on ships for the British, the French later to bring them on in. So, yeah, it's just an amazing story. So I definitely want to learn more about them. Yeah.
A couple of things that we talked a little bit about this, but we can talk about more pamphlets as social media of the day. There's there must be some scholarship and or documentaries out there about pamphlets.
Yeah.
How they rose, what they, but it tells me that there's, no matter the form, the medium, the format, human beings want to communicate. It's a magazine, it's a tweet, it's a whatever. Whatever the technology is that allows us to do it, we're going to communicate. And at that day and that time, pamphlets were the thing. And there were printing presses and great pamphlet wars, apparently, you know, between people. Somebody would make a pamphlet and somebody would, you know, write back. Again, even in the Hamilton musical, there's some mention of that. I just can't imagine, you know, there must be libraries full of pamphlets as great research material. So,
yeah, there sure is. And the words are, some ways you feel that in social media today, they're weapons. So, you know, you use them against someone or a group, and you find a lot of times pamphleteers, printing presses are the primary object that mobs go after and destroy and burn.
And then later it would be a radio station or a TV station. That's one of the first things that you do if you're going to have a coup, say, is you take over the broadcast facilities.
Exactly. Exactly. Communications is so just ingrained and just so social in us that it's just part of our DNA.
Right. Yeah, and the ability to do mass communications.
Exactly.
One to many.
Yeah. Yeah. In this time period, for the Telegraph. Mm-hmm. It's just amazing. Just amazing how they could move these pamphlets and
complex ideas and ideas that touch the hearts of men, so to speak. You know, to be eloquent. I wish I was as eloquent. but they were inspiring and seditious. If you were on the other side, you know, they were powerful things.
They are extremely powerful. Yeah. What the pen is stronger,
mightier than the sword. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah. So true. So true.
The last thing on my list was Abigail Adams. They dropped a couple of quotes from her in there, and I was like, oh, you know, I kind of know the name, but I don't know anything about her. So that would be something fun to learn about is her a little bit more. She sounds interesting. But whenever I think of, so she's the wife of John Adams, but whenever I hear the name John Adams, this is what I think of.
John Adams. I know him. That can't be. That's that little guy who spoke to me all those years ago.
So there's a clip from the musical Hamilton, if you haven't already seen it. But just the way he says is John Adams.
It's John Adams.
It's just stuck in my head. So I had to buy it. I had to fish that out real quick.
Love it.
But
love
Abigail it. Adams seems like a very interesting person. So
she is. She is. She's one of the most political, insightful person in the era. Mm. So
really?
Yes.
There you go.
Yes.
Cool.
Great. Okay. We're going to shift our gears a little bit and talk about what surprised you most. And I'll start. And so for this one, I was really surprised by the Haitians' prisoner of war treatment. Mm-hmm. And I see you mentioned it as well. Mm-hmm. I didn't know much about it at all. And the fact that they were living, you know, they were willing to give them lighter treatment. Mm-hmm. And the fact that they were then going back home and then coming back.
Yes.
Bringing their families.
My whole family and I were surprised by that.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was totally surprising.
And this idea that they're victims of tyranny as well. That was this motivating thought. Like, these poor bastards, they got shipped halfway around the world. They're fighting in some fight that they don't have any connection to. And so maybe, you know, maybe we'll change the way that we treat them and, you know, turn them an enemy into an ally.
Yes, exactly.
And I had no idea, too, the level of Hessian involvement. I think that was something that I, you know, picked up from before was like, wow, this is actually like a really big deal.
It is. It is. You know, there's historians who talk about that even though the British Empire had the strongest navy, mm-hmm. But actually their army was not that huge, mm-hmm. and they needed help for sure. Right. And so that's why they turned to them to bolster their roster, because they were pretty small army.
Well, you have Marines on a ship and you have a certain number of soldiery there, but you have a lot of ships. So that's a lot of able-bodied seamen that are not ground forces.
Yeah.
And you have a small country.
Yeah.
So you have these competing interests on how many people, and you know, they used to have the press gangs and people weren't, it wasn't an all volunteer Navy. So, the idea, that you just didn't have enough able-bodied men to go around to serve both army forces and naval forces. So,
and that leads us to your other surprising moment,
which is 50,000 Americans fighting for the British.
Yeah,
that's a lot.
Yeah, and the Caribbean uprisings.
Yes,
right.
Yeah,
because because you needed men, you had to take them away from the Caribbean islands.
Right.
And that gives slaves opportunity to see what they could try to do and create some kind of freedom.
And then this is one of my parts of the what stories are is Burns telling and what he's telling well.
Yeah.
A note that I have here is just the fortunes of history turn on so many bizarre little twists. A young enslaved boy emptying the pistol of his master is the thing that tips off the slavers that there's a rebellion fomenting that could have altered the balance of power in there. So suddenly the British are fighting two fronts, so to speak, right? There's two, you know, they have another major engagement that they have to deal with. Or a storm, that's right, you know, a storm that allows Washington to escape, or fog on Lake Champlain. There's just so many little bizarre twists that could completely change the course of history.
Yeah. It's all those little moments, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
So I think he's telling a really good story in that regard, that there's these little things that could just, you know, that we're here is very lucky, or that Montreal is not an American city is a trick of fate again. Right.
Yeah.
And so all of that, I think for me, is coming through really well.
Nice. Nice. And, for me, the kind of looking at an episode as a whole, it's a great story of American persistence, mm-hmm. and like what you were saying, luck, right? That they happen to be like in near Trenton, they happen to, you know, the fact that the British were just as strung out with lack of troops that they were able to attack Trenton and get a major victory, which will help boost the morale of the Continental Army.
Right.
So it's just luck. It's persistence. It really is just, I think, one of the hearts of our American Revolution.
And to add to that, which was also on my list, is that our national heroes are both just people who are flawed. And we can seriously question them and have like, oh my God, I can't believe that about that person, right? Whatever.
Yeah.
But they're just people, but they're also just people who rose to the occasion.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
And what, how, or why, you know, those things, but it's people who committed to an idea or a set of values or something, but they're still just people at the end of the day.
Yes. Yes. And
flaws and all.
Flaws and all. And what kind of inspiration those ideas could bring to a person. Mm-hmm. And that great story at the end, right, about just one person finally volunteers one more time, mm-hmm. and then another one, and another one. So it's contagious. I think we mentioned
about that. I mean, I'm like about, you know, you're there, and your troops are about to all leave in the middle of the war. Like,
yeah,
that's just, I cannot fathom that, because we have our military works in a different way now,
yeah,
for obvious reasons.
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
I gotta go back to my corporate cubicle job. Sorry, here's my rifle and I'm gonna go now. Bye.
That's right.
What?
I got the project report that's due.
Yeah,
so exactly. Gotta go.
Yeah, my quarterly reports.
My quarterly.
Yeah. My shift manager at the Subway sandwich shop is texting me. I sorry, nobody can fill my shift. It's wild.
Excellent. And I think you have one final thing about the material.
Oh, I kind of took it off. I didn't think it was necessarily germane, but is this what he's I don't know that he's telling. Maybe this should have been in the surprise. There's so many little variances here, but just that war consumes so much material.
Yes.
You know, you need food, you need water, you need ammunition. You know, they're talking about like 7,000 cannonball, 50,000 shot, whatever. It's just like, right? And all of that, once that a lot of that material is consumed, it's gone.
Yes.
Right? So you need this endless, steady supply of things. So that's you know, when in our current situation, there's this weird chatter about civil war. Oh, is that, are we coming to another civil war or whatever? No, because modern firearms consume ammunition at a much greater rate than a musket back in the day. So to stand up an army is one thing, but to equip and supply an army, man, you're talking about a massive amount of resources and material that would be needed to sustain and actually achieve a victory of any kind. And I'm just talking in war in general, right?
Yeah.
You need
yeah.
dedicated in industry.
Exactly.
To be able to feed an army.
Yeah.
Not just feed an army food, but you know, feed in all of its consumption needs.
That's right. That's right. That's really important thing to not to forget in this story. And then going forward, you see it throughout all history of warfare.
Right. And that's what was one of the things that made Napoleon so successful so early on, is he understood the logistics.
Yes, exactly.
I mean, I'm being very trite in simplifying that, but that is something that it's received wisdom. I don't know if it's true. Somebody can write in and challenge me. I'm not going to, it's not a fight that I'm going to try to win, but that's what I've been told is that he understood logistics very well. And that's what the modern American military is also very good at, is logistics and operations.
Yes, so. Exactly. You underestimate the importance of that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Great. Anything else, Brian?
That's it.
Okay. Well, this has been fun. We will be back tomorrow. We'll figure out our recording schedule. And I think this is kind of one of those podcasts that's going to be a little bit evergreen. People are going to catch up to it when and as they can. But stay tuned for when we pick a date for a wrap-up with Marilyn. Otherwise, Lorehounds at thelorehounds.com. Again, rate and review and subscribe. To all of our Discord server boosters, thank you so much for making our Discord a better place for our community. And to all of our subscribers, and especially our lore masters, thank you all so very much for your subscriptions. We literally could not do these kinds of things without you. So, Brian, until tomorrow.
Until tomorrow.
The Lorehounds podcast is produced and published by The Lorehounds. You can send questions and comments to lorehounds@thelorehounds.com. Get ad-free access to all Lorehounds podcasts on Patreon or Supercast, and connect with us on Blue Sky and join us on our Discord server. Links for everything are in the link tree in the show notes of this episode. Any opinions stated are ours personally and do not reflect the opinion of or belong to any employers or other entities. Thanks for listening.